Feast of the Presentation is a paradox. It's one of the oldest festivals in the Christian year, yet one which most Christians and denominations don't really observe. It's also a bit anachronistic in that the days are long gone when we think that women needed to be purified after giving birth. Though, as I've said, there are shades of that in the Book of Common Prayer of the Church of England, compiled during the Reformation, where there was a service called the Churching of Women, which had the same sort of idea as the Jewish notion of a new mother needing to be purified. I wonder if it became a time of rest before the new mum was expected to do much, so it may have had a bit of a good point to it. So, for many years, 40 days after Christmas, Candlemas, or the Festival of the Presentation at the Temple, was celebrated. Only the first part of today's reading deals with the purification aspect. Luke quotes the Old Testament about the firstborn being dedicated to the Lord, but doesn't do much with the purification thing. The presentation in the temple is motivated by specific requirements of the law of Moses. According to Leviticus 12, after a woman gives birth to a son, she's impure for 40 days. At the end of that period, she's to bring an offering to the temple, which the priest offers as a sacrifice, effecting her purification. Other parts of the Old Testament imply that the firstborn is dedicated to the Lord. So Luke weaves the idea of Jesus as firstborn being special to God with the old ritual idea of purification. It's an interesting contrast with our own age, when now parents expect to receive gifts when a child is born, in gratitude for what has been given to them, instead of going off to a temple and giving something. Mary, in gratitude, made that offering with Joseph of two turtle doves. Given their modest means, the sacrifice of the two doves was entirely appropriate and probably quite costly for them. Then the passage gets more interesting as we meet the characters of Simeon and Anna. We read about Simeon and Anna and forget the story is actually about Jesus. Simeon was an old man who had been waiting for the Messiah. He had fervently hoped not to die before the Messiah came, and in Jesus his hope is fulfilled. Like many men, he's reduced to awe when holding the baby. But his insights and reflection is profound. When a child is born, many people are bound up with their own hopes and dreams. Simeon is unusual in that he vocalizes these hopes and dreams to the parents. In the face of new life, we are awestruck. Simeon, however, is brave and tells Mary that her own heart will be pierced. We read the story knowing how it ends. We read these words and think of the cross. It must have been very brave of Simeon to say all this to a new mother. Who knows how she might have reacted? Mary must have been surprised by the encounter. Maybe she came to realize later on that for her, as for us, more people are involved in our lives than we realize. The people we love, our neighbours, those with whom we interact, even oddball prophets in temples. Sadly, this realisation of how many people are involved in our lives often only comes out in funerals. We don't know much about Anna. Luke says she spent her entire life in the temple serving the Lord. Maybe now we'd see her as a saint. Maybe now we'd see her as a bit strange. Maybe the saints were a bit strange. She confirms Simeon's words and underlines this wider community that surrounds Jesus with love and care. So we have ideas of sacrificial giving, dreaming, telling the truth, and a community that surrounds folk with love. All themes for our church life, all ways of letting light shine in the darkness. So first, giving. Since I've been here, I have been amazed at the generosity of this congregation and how you manage to fund the work of God here in our synod and through our M&M contributions to the wider URC. I'm told that in the not too distant past that money was tight, and others have told me how they were all asked to give sacrificially to the work of God in this place. It's a testament to your generosity and vision for the future that you rose to that challenge. And even now, you don't think you've got much money. I have to tell you that for my last 25 years, I've never worked in a church which had more than £1,500 in the bank at any one time. So working in a church which has as much as you've got feels quite safe to me, but I like to live dangerously. The generations who came before us gave, enabling the church to be here now. We continue to fund the work that God gives us and to ensure that there is a future for those who come after us. Like Mary and Joseph, we give what we can in order to give back to God something of what God has given us. And then Simeon and Anna were dreamers, devoted servants of God. These dual aspects allowed them to recognize Jesus in their midst. What do we dream? What are our hopes for the future, for our children and grandchildren, for the generations that come after us? What do we dream of for this church? What are our hopes as we allow our dreams to come to be shared with other servants of God, so we get a sense of where God is leading us next? Simeon told the truth. It can't have been easy for him to tell a new mother that a sword would pierce her heart and that her child would be the source of much division. Sometimes we know we have to tell the truth, and sometimes that can be hard. Whether it's telling the truth to power, telling the truth to ourselves, telling the truth to others, we need to pray to have Simeon's wisdom and strength. And finally, there is this wider community that care for Jesus. Anna and Simeon were strangers, yet part of the same community of faith, and they felt able to come and speak to Mary and Joseph. In the church, we're all about building community. That doesn't mean we have to like everybody, but it does mean we have to love everyone. Here, all are welcomed. Here, all are called to be disciples. Here, all are loved and valued. Here, we may be told the truth in the hope it will change and challenge us and enable us to be lights in our dark world, lights which point to Jesus, the one whom we celebrate this and every Sunday. Amen. Our next hymn, number 132, was written by the Free Church of Scotland minister, Walter Chalmers Smith, and first published back in 1867. Like many old hymns, I suspect it has survived because of the imaginative 20th century pairing of this hymn with the lovely Welsh tune to which we sing it. We rise to sing, immortal, invisible, God only wise.